Welcome to the More Perfect Union Podcast, a regular discussion on the state of American politics and current events with entertaining and respectful commentary from across the political spectrum. Hello and welcome to the More Perfect Union, a podcast about the joy we get from American politics. You hear that? I said joy, and it was like a big space. Just so you guys knew that. Notice that. I'm Alan. I'm a libertarian from Saginaw, Michigan.
Hi, I'm DJ from Suffolk. I'm a cost estimator and economics instructor, self-described economic conservative, and self-confessed Republican.
I'm Jonah. I'm an independent from Maryland.
And I'm Kevin. I live in Los Angeles. I do some television writing, and I'm a Democrat with a little bit of a conservative lean.
So before you do anything, I want you guys listening to this, go to the moreperfectunionpodcast.com, where you can actually read mostly Kevin, but some really decent blogging going on there by some of us. Or you can go to the Facebook page, facebook.com/moreperfectunionpodcast. And then since you're probably listening to this on your iPhone, I'm not going to ask that you pull over if you're driving because, you know, hey, let's not get in an accident. But rate and review us on iTunes. It'd be really awesome to get up there so people can really see what kind of stuff we're doing. And just to date the show, Obama just spoke. He just was in the Oval Office on a Sunday night. And DJ, tell us a little bit about what he had to say.
Well, it was interesting. He essentially addressed it as I think he should have. He said, look, this was a terrorist attack. We don't know how directly involved Daesh was, and for those who Daesh is the Arabic term for ISIL, but we do know that they were clearly radicalized, and that among other things, this tells us we have a problem in Daesh and Al Qaeda that we have to deal with. We have a problem with essentially radical Islam that has to be dealt with, both by other Muslims and by the rest of us, that we need to be careful how we deal with it. He said some things that I didn't necessarily
think were necessary. He didn't say specifically radical Islam, but pretty close, actually. I was sort of surprised. I know that a lot of the red meat right want him to say some things very specifically that he hasn't been willing to say as an Islamic terrorism, which is semantics. But he was pretty solid tonight, actually. He didn't say anything that
I thought he was too. And the only things that sounded a bit off key to me were, one, from a practical perspective, the use of the no-fly list. Lest we forget, Senator Ted Kennedy was on that no-fly list, which means either the Department of Homeland Security has some really good intel on Chappaquiddick, or we're very careful about that list.
I just jump in and say, I do believe that the president addressed that, and other people have addressed that today, too. Yes, there are names on the no-fly list that shouldn't be there. But you know what? You deal with those, you correct them, and you move on. The idea that we shouldn't use the no-fly list to stop terrorists from getting handguns or from getting long guns simply because there's a couple of mistakes on the list, that doesn't make sense to me.
And I'm not. All I am saying is that the no-fly list, that list needs to be tightened up. And if it once it is tightened up, and as it is tightened up, then certainly it is something that can be included. But the no-fly list is also, I'm sure the president was not going to ignore this, but the no-fly list is not the only terrorist database or proto-terrorist information that we have. And I think we can possibly – we don't have to use just the no-fly list and this sort of thing. But, you know, there probably should be a lot more coordination between the counterintelligence and the terrorist watchers and law enforcement. And another thing that I've heard from the president that I liked was that he said, you know, we're gonna look at the K-1 visa. He didn't use it by name, but it was clear. We're going to look at the K-1 visa process, and we're going to see how to tighten that up too.
Yeah, there's something to be said about the fact that he admitted that in Europe, you know, people can travel pretty loosely there, and that's sort of a wide open hole. And he flat described that problem. So that was good. I think he did what he needed to do tonight. It was not, you know, he didn't get into the real specifics, but I think he said what needed to be said. And I think people were kind of waiting for the, particularly the, you know, his, his executive department to say, yep, this was definitely terrorism. We don't know exactly how they were connected into it, but this was, you know, Islamic radicalization. And I think that was good. Honestly, I listened to it waiting to be pissed off, and there wasn't anything in there that made me mad at all.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I appreciated the fact that he asked Congress to essentially give him authorization to continue military action, because you normally don't hear from presidents a lot. Hey, mostly when a president decides to engage in military action, the response, and I've seen it in presidents of both parties, has basically been to tell Congress, you know, you just go off, sit in a hole somewhere and let me handle this all by myself.
Yeah, kind of.
He didn't do that. No. And that was good. He said, you know, Congress needs to come in on this too and give me full authorization. And I appreciated that as well.
Yeah, I agree.
The phrase that jumped out to me was early on. I wrote it down here, and it's this idea of complex acts of terrorism. And he said it early on in the speech. And I think that this is the problem that we have as a nation, that we have getting our heads around what terrorism is today and the different nuances of it. And we see that reflected, like what you guys were just talking about, in the no-fly list. So, like, my opinions on, you know, gun rights and gun control are probably fairly nuanced, and I don't feel super strongly one way or the other, but I am on board with, you have been designated as a threat to air travel. Those people, I'm okay with not letting them have guns. I'm okay with saying this is so complex, this issue right now, and the violence of this issue, that it's okay if we talk about it in a way that is not easy to understand for stupid people. We have to be able to assume that the people that are in on this conversation can think about some things, can hold more than two thoughts in their head at once.
Very good point. And I'd like to just piggyback on that and say, again, DJ raises a very valid point that if the list has flaws, and apparently it does, they need to be cleaned up. But I would say, why not institute a law, legislation, whatever it is, stopping people on that list from getting guns first, and then we'll fix the list. Why say, let's wait 6 months or a year or 18 months to get the list cleaned up, then we'll institute it. Right now, our biggest problem is bad people getting guns. Our biggest problem is not whether Ted Kennedy or someone alive in Ted Kennedy's situation might have a little problem at the airport or might have a little problem at the gun store. Okay, our problem is, let's keep guns out of the hands of really bad individuals. So that's why, you know, the Senate vote to me did not make sense.
The problem with that is, we don't know how deep the problem with the no-fly list is, number one. And number two, the no-fly list is not the only list we have at our disposal.
But
there
it's
are
the list
other
that the Senate voted on.
Options.
It's
yes,
the list
I know
that,
it's a list
the Senate,
Senate
decided,
voted on.
Decided to put in front of its voters, of its 100 senators, and just an up or down vote. Is this a list we can use to stop terrorists from getting guns? That's the list they voted on. And all I'm saying is, we just have a very basic, you know, difference of opinion here. I say institute the safety mechanism first, fix the list later. You're saying, fix the list. Let's worry about the constitutional rights of the people on the list before we deal with terrorism. I say, let's deal with terrorism, and we'll fix the list so nobody's constitutional rights are abridged. Mm. Again,
I do believe the president said something about not going against our values, and chief of them being constitutional rights. But the bigger practical issue is, I think that list is so gummed up that I don't want it used for anything.
Okay.
That's my problem.
Okay. We've
I
got
don't think
circles.
The list is good enough to use.
I will defer on that one. Okay. What's next on our list of topics?
Oh, how are these candidates that we love, that we follow, that make our heartstrings sing? How are they responding to shootings?
Well, let's dispatch it with the Dems, because they're more boring about this, to be honest. I mean, I think they've been predictable and within reason of where they're coming from. I don't know what Bernie had to say about it.
Something about how gun control was not the whole answer, but he was willing to back an assault weapons ban, which I think Bernie's been trying to straddle the gun rights issue basically from the moment he said, I'm running for president. Yep. Somebody said, but wait, why are you a Democrat if your record on guns is so terrible?
Yep.
Or Democrats?
Yeah, exactly. The NRA.
He's been trying to do that, and he is continuing to do that. I think for a lot of the Republican candidates, and I can say this for a lot of folks who are in the Republican Party, really the moment for us, for lack of a better term, the moment it became, the moment we all found out that Ms. Malik declared allegiance to Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi as the attack was being conducted, the notion that gun rights should even be part of this discussion sort of, it just sort of fell off our radar. It said, okay, wait a minute, we have much bigger issues to worry about than this. We found out that the Paris attackers, in fact, got their guns from a Montenegro armory that they stole. Side note, I think the reason we just extended an invitation from Montenegro to join NATO is that we could keep better track of their frickin' armory.
I agree. I was pretty hot about that whole. Well, you know what I was hot about? I was hot about they were so quick to talk about, they categorized the shooters as white Christians like the day that it was happening. And I'm like, why would they do that? What's the rush? What is the rush with them to make sure that they? It's like they want to paint a narrative. They want to be able to lay the framework for a narrative so early on. And I think the Dems were a little bit guilty of falling into that. With they wanted to make this about gun rights. They wanted to make this about. They really did. I mean, the narrative was laid down so early, and then of course more evidence comes out later. I'm like, what's the freaking rush? Honestly, can't we just stand there and be horrified for a little while and wait to see what happens? I don't know.
Well, if I may steal Kevin's clothes for a minute, if memory serves, I remember because I caught some foreign press accounts of it as it was happening, and I remember I think an Australian paper saying that initially the authorities had said that, you know, we're looking for two or three white people, so I think the initial speculation may have had something to do with what the authorities said they were looking for. I'm not entirely certain.
I'm sure that's right, but what's like, when has it ever paid off for them to jump on that narrative early? Like,
I mean, that's the reality of our journalism these days, though. Yep. You know, it's all about what's trending now, and that's where the clicks are going to go. My question is,
there's no accountability for being, for jumping the gun. No one's going to come, except for me being pissed about it. Like, there's not, you don't see people going, wow, we really missed it on this one, because no one remembers that part. But I mean, like, the fact that it was so, it felt awfully similar to when it was happening.
Yeah.
And I'm listening to the accounts of it on different radio stations. It felt very much like France to me. Like, it was sort of unrolling right in front of us. And I'm like, what's the rush? I don't know.
What I want to know is if any of you have heard anything from any of the Republican candidates that is different from, no, you can't take away anybody's guns. Like, is there anyone, and if there is, I missed it. Is there anyone, any of the Republican candidates that has mused about the possibility of this taking guns away from no-fly list people? Like, is there anyone on the stage that
Kasich.
Is Kasich talking about that?
Kasich has talked about the no-fly list. Kasich and Rubio are, in fact, arguing about how effective the no-fly list is. Well, they're not arguing. They're talking past each other. But I don't know. I know Kasich has. He said to use the no-fly list. And I know Rubio has responded to that in some way. I don't know about the rest of the candidates. Oddly enough, you know, Donald Trump has been quiet, which is very unusual for him.
Yeah. Well, they're all still battling over the base, so no one's going to come right out. No one's going to come out against, you know, I everything's going to be predictable about this. I do think they were sort of waiting to find out if we thought it was terrorism, you know, if we thought it was jihadism kind of stuff before they, and I think they might have been wise to do that. I don't know. Mm. So I'm less interested in that as to, on my interactions with people over the last couple of weeks. I haven't been on for a couple of weeks. I want to jump because DJ said something about it. Let's talk about the Republican candidates polling. Can we do that?
Sure.
Let's get that out of the way, because it's driving me crazy. I hear everywhere. So the question is, are we ready to take Donald Trump seriously or not? Because he doesn't seem to be falling in the polls. He seems to be, everything he does, no matter how stupid, he's gaining in polls. And so now all of a sudden people are like, well, you know, what's the God, I got into it with someone on Facebook, and their main question was, you know, what can you say about him that's not good beyond, you know, they want to know why is he sticking around? What is it about it? Why don't his polling numbers ever change? And they're saying it's because he's the real thing. And I'm like, man, I'm not gonna believe any of it until they vote for someone. You know, no one's cast any votes yet. But what do you guys think?
I would say, and I looked at the, I looked at both the Quinnipiac and the CNN poll. Now, the CNN, I did a bit of a deep dive in the CNN poll because it showed the various breakdowns by age and regions and such. And I have some problems with it in that the sample size was relatively small. Now, small sample sizes by themselves are not necessarily a bad thing. The margin of errors take care of that. The problem is the smaller the sample size you have, the greater danger of one particular demographic dominating the discussion. For example, when you looked at the breakdown of the CNN poll, the numbers for the Northeast, the Midwest, and the West were so small that they couldn't actually put numbers up for them. The only region, sub-region, that had enough people in the sample that you could do a breakdown was the South. That would mean that the South was at least half of the sample that they surveyed. The problem is when you come to delegates, and I did a look at by checking on the delegate allocation, the South won't even be the South is not going to be anywhere near half of the delegates selected. It won't even probably won't even get to a third of the delegates selected. So you have a really bad regional weighting issue if you have a situation where the South is the only part of the sample that is large enough to even be measured. The age groups, any age group under 50 was so small that they couldn't be measured. Now, yes, the Republican Party is an older party, but it's not that much of an older party. But I think there's one thing that the two polls did cite that I think is interesting, and that is Carson is falling back. Mm-hmm. And that's why Trump actually looks better. In the Quinnipiac poll, Trump didn't move within the margin of error. He did move in the CNN poll. But Carson fell back to Rubio and Cruz. And if he continues to fall back, then it will essentially – I'd always said that it would probably be a four-person race. It may very well end up being just a three-person race between Trump, Rubio, and Cruz. Maybe one of the governors, if they catch on in New Hampshire, can join that group. But we are now seeing the situation. We are now seeing how the field will winnow out after Iowa, after New Hampshire. And once it winnows and gets that small, then the 20 to 35% that Trump has been getting and that Trump has been holding is not going to be enough in a three-person field or in a four-person field. It's more than enough in a 15-person field.
Well, let me just say it's a very good analysis, and I don't necessarily think you're off, but I'd like to add 2 points. First of all, even if you're right that the CNN poll is somehow skewed a little heavily towards a demographic that bumped Trump's numbers beyond what they should be, if you look at other polls, Quinnipiac, Fox, it's still, you know, he's at 27, 28% and leading by a good 10 to 12 points. So in a worst case scenario, he's up by that much. The CNN poll suggests it's more like 20 points. Okay, so maybe that's an outlier. Time is going to tell. The other thing is, you're basically assuming, DJ, that Trump stays at 35%, that he picks up nothing from the other candidates who drop out of the field, and that all of those votes go to either a Cruz or a Rubio, or like you said, one of the governors, possibly Christie, possibly Kasich, possibly even Jeb Bush, although I highly doubt it. I still suspect that whoever is left in that field is going to be splitting votes, and that leaves, I think, a clear path for Donald Trump to win some primaries with 36, 40, 42% of the vote. Time will prove me right or wrong, but I think that that's a possibility.
Yeah. Yeah, so that is interesting, like where all these people's votes go, right? So where do Rand Paul's people go? Like when he finally leaves, his 1, 2, 4% of people, do they go to Trump?
Gary Johnson.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. Again, you're assuming that 2%, you're assuming is a monolithic group. The fact of the matter is it's going to be fragmented. Some will go to Trump and some won't.
So I think that with some of these people, I think that's true. I can see like Fiorina's people not knowing what to do. I can see, Chris Christie's people kind of sucking it up and going with Rubio. I don't know. Like Rand Paul's people seem they might go somewhere as a block, and like 75% of them go to the same people just because they have a specific ideology and worldview. I don't know. I keep going back to this idea that that the primaries and they're going to start. The delegates are going to start to be proportioned, and then it's just going to go, you know, up and down as we go through the country, and people are going to get chunks here and chunks there, and it's going to end up crazy.
So how are the conventional Republicans, the right now what you're getting is you're getting the red meat Tea Party types that are fired up, and the what you're hearing is from those people, but because I think most, you know, the main huge block of people that vote Republican, I don't think they're paying as much attention as they will be in a few months. But I mean, anecdotally, when I talk to people who look at themselves as party Republicans, not one of them is going to pull the lever for Trump. Not one of them. They're like, this is crazy. They all have the same question I have. How the hell is he doing this? So my thing is, like, when are they going to decide to, I don't know. I don't know. Could it be just the polling?
Yeah. Well, again, you're talking about the Wall Street Republicans, yep. Right? Like the old school
establishment Republicans.
I'm a Bob Dole guy kind of Republican, right?
Yeah. I mean, essentially, but establishment Republicans. Look, Mitt Romney was the candidate last time, you know?
Yeah.
Mitt Romney and Donald Trump are very different. Like, I think Mitt Romney and Donald Trump are as different or more different than, you know, like the Dems and the Republicans at this point. I just don't see the establishment falling in for Trump, even when maybe some of the more establishment candidates fall out. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, but again, maybe, you know, if we are left with a 4-person race, you know, some of those people will back Cruz because they're a little bit more right.
I can't see Cruz taking much of the establishment either. That's the
thing. Well, I don't know. He's got
Rubio's going to get some, and whoever that third candidate is, whether it's not going to be Carson, I don't think. But if it's Bush, if it's Christie, if it's Kasich, some of them are going to go to that guy. And again, you know, I got to look again. And the caveat is we're all just guessing here. We're all just spectators in this. But, you know, if Donald Trump wins one or two early primaries, the devil's advocate argument is that people are going to start to say, hey, not only do I like him, but he's for real. It's not a wasted vote. He might pick up steam. So this idea that some, you know, alignment of the planets is going to work to knock him out of first place, it's a theory, but there's nothing behind that theory except, quite frankly, a lot of hope. There's no proof.
I mean, here's the thing. I am perfectly willing to, in a few months, eat my words, but there's just no way. There's no way. There's okay. There's no way he's winning. He's winning when real Republicans show up to vote.
No okay. This was something. I mean, but we saw something like this in 1996 with Pat Buchanan. Pat Buchanan won the New Hampshire primary, and everybody assumed, okay, he's on his way.
He's a contender.
Real. Take him serious. Exactly. He's a contender and everything. He promptly lost the Arizona primary to Steve Forbes. Then he lost the South Carolina primary to Bob Dole because Republicans said, okay, we're not sure who we like, but we know we don't like him. And, you know, Pat Buchanan never won another state again. Mm-hmm. Now, Trump is not Pat Buchanan, obviously. Trump has some advantages that Buchanan doesn't have.
Like $9 billion.
Well, yes, but...
also the hair.
Well, the hair probably helps too.
Yeah, you know
but,
it.
But, you know, going forward, and I would just simply say that if money spent meant voters gotten, Jeb Bush would be ahead in New Hampshire by 50 points
sure,
right now.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And so, I honestly won't lie to you. I thought money spent was voters. I honestly thought that was pretty much a one for one thing probably 2 months ago. So now I'll eat my words if I have to. I have no problem with that, but I still don't believe that. Once they start casting some votes, if he becomes real, then I start deciding what country I'm going to move to.
Do you guys think that? Do you think that once people start dropping out on the Republican side, does Bush have a chance to rebound? I mean, he's at 3%, 5%, something. Can he get back up to 20 something?
You're not hearing very much from him. Man, I'm shocked, but you're not seeing any.
Well, I'm seeing because I have Flipboard on the iPad, and so I look at these headlines, and the Bush headlines that come up are things like he impresses people. People are saying he's back on track, but he's just not registering in the polls. Like, whatever he did 2 weeks ago, he's apparently talking tough and impressing people now. But is it too little? Like, once Carson's gone, once, like, it's down to four people, if he happens to be one in there, can he get the establishment back? Can he get the rank and file back?
I don't think so either.
I think now more than even before, the last name is a problem for him. I think
huge.
I think that book that came out a few weeks ago, and I think the last name is, and the fact that he's not been a ball of fire up to this point, I think the last name plays against him a bit now too. I think Rubio is the only place that the establishment can land at this point.
I would say that most establishment Republicans have come to the conclusion that if they're in a position where they have to find a candidate to stop Trump and bet all their money on that person, it's not going to be Bush. It's going to be Rubio.
I agree,
because Rubio is the only one, the only establishment friendly candidate, if you will, who has managed to connect with anything more than 2 or 3% of the voters. He's shown that he's good on his feet in various debates. He has a lot of the talents that the establishment looks for in a candidate, a lot of the campaign skills. And Jeb Bush just doesn't have them anymore. He is far too rusty, and it seems he can't shake that rust off.
And one last thing on Bush, let me just add that now that the election is clearly going to skew a little bit more towards foreign policy, with the possibility of, you know, having to send boots on the ground, I know people hate that phrase, into Iraq, I'm telling you, people do not want another Bush at the helm. It just gives them a bad feeling of George W. Bush.
I think there's a bad taste in the mouth there a little bit. I agree.
Yeah. So let me, I have a Rubio question. I got Rickrolled on Facebook this week by a political article that I was really wanting to be true and turned out not to be true. So I saw something after that, and I went and I actually Googled it and tried to find a number of sources. And I found this out there a little bit, but it might not be true. And it is this, is the Bush campaign conducting a whisper campaign trying to get people to write articles saying that Rubio has a mistress? Because I've started to see a couple of weird things that it's coming out because of his financial disclosures, that there's money going to a weird place that he can't account for and hasn't answered to.
I've had three of my wildly conspiratorial liberal friends say, oh, he won't make it because he's got too many mistresses. I've heard that multiple times. I have no idea. I haven't seen anything except from them on that. But
so I Googled it, and I found mentions on what seemed to be like actual newspapers and like TV stations, but they're very small and they're regional and they're asking questions and not presenting facts.
Interesting. I just Googled it, and right now it's all about them asking about, is Jeb pushing this?
Yeah. Is that the fallout? Is Jeb Bush going to take Rubio with him? Is he that mad at this guy?
That's interesting. That's interesting.
It says something about the politics of 2015 that a candidate could very well have a mistress. And the campaign that is going to be most damaged is the one that exposes the mistress, not the campaign with the candidate who had the mistress. Now, I have a number of friends in the Republican Party who do not support Rubio because they do support Bush. These are the people who you would think would spread this around as much as possible if all this narrative is true. They haven't really talked about it very much. Which leads me, so I'm not, you know, I can't say whether or not it's true, and one, I can't say whether or not it's true that the Bush people are trying to push it one way or the other.
I will say that from the
pro-Bush friends that I know, I haven't really heard much about this.
It borders on hilarious, considering Trump's had like three wives, and I mean, Trump's an absolute train wreck on this. But yet Rubio's getting all the heat. You know, can you just imagine I don't even have to worry about it. There's no way he's going that far. But
Well, here's the thing. If Rubio was getting legitimate heat on this, he would have to address the issue himself. And as far as, and believe me, he's not addressing this issue at all. His campaign's not addressing the issue.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't know how much heat he's actually gotten and how much of this is just, you know, Facebook ramblings and social media such and a lot of fun on people making whispers about whispers. But we'll see.
I think it's and I'll be done with it. But it does remind me of John Edwards, right? Like if this does come out, it has to be before the primary gets too far along.
Yeah, I agree.
You know?
I agree.
Yeah, I mean, if he starts getting some support and going up, and then it comes out, then that's I don't know who that's good for Hillary.
Well,
I guess.
But here's the thing about the Edwards stuff that came out. That came out 4 years after he was John Kerry's vice presidential running mate.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he had run before in 2004,
mm-hmm.
and none of it happened. It came up during the 2008 campaign for whatever reason.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think because Obama and Hillary had better researchers, probably, more than likely. But before we depart from this, who's the next Republican that's going to jump out? Ideas?
Oh, geez.
I never know.
It's like
Lindsey Graham.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? The JV team is really could be anyone at this point.
The people at 0%.
Yeah. Kasich strikes me as ready to be done. When I see him on TV, he seems like he's just about ready to be done. Actually, so does Bush. Bush, man. He seems like he wants to be done.
I also think Carly Fiorina seems to be on fumes at this point.
Yeah. You don't. Yeah. I'm not watching that. I'm not seeing any of those people showing up. I mean, Trump is taking all the oxygen. And then, you know, Rubio and Carson. Carson, you know, a few weeks ago was taking a lot of heat. Now you're not hearing much about him. So it's interesting.
I am actually going to say that I don't think any of them are going to pull out until after Iowa.
Yeah.
Which means the first person who's going to go is someone who's betting the farm on Iowa. I'm going to say I'm going to do an either or, but I'm going to say it's either Huckabee or Santorum.
It's Huckabee.
Because
Santorum's still in it. I didn't even know.
Oh, yeah. He ain't going nowhere.
That's hilarious. I'm sorry. Yeah, I just thought about that because didn't Huckabee win Iowa once?
He did, and that's why I think he's hoping for lightning in a bottle again.
Yeah.
So is Santorum because
Santorum
found out, he actually did win Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
So I think after Iowa, I think both of them maybe on the same day will go. Yeah. Okay, we get lightning in a bottle this time. It's time for us to go.
Yeah. They loved me in Iowa. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Okay, let's talk about guns, you guys. You want to talk about guns?
Love it. I love to talk about guns.
Great.
Well, then lead us off. I want to hear Jonah, and I want to hear Kevin on guns.
No, you don't, but that's okay.
Well, no, I've seen what Kevin wrote, and right. I'm okay with it. I want to hear Jonah on guns because he's an independent.
I mean, it's really this. I am in the middle ground on this. Because
so am I.
It's this idea that we know people in our lives that are, and I've said this before, but I've got law enforcement and ex-military, and I've got all these, you know, people in my extended family and friends who are super respectful and have gun safes and, you know, and are highly educated and incredibly safe when it comes to protecting these weapons. And they treat them with that respect.
They take the responsibility seriously. The same thing here. Exactly.
And so the dilemma for me is I also think it's absolutely true that we don't like there's. Okay. So I put this on Facebook right after the last shooting in my town, there was a stabbing. There was a guy stabbed two other guys outside of a store downtown here. And what I wrote on Facebook was, it is absolutely true that if a crazy person can't get a gun, they will get a knife and stab you. But these two guys are expected to make a full recovery because they weren't shot, because they were stabbed, you know? And so I am so conflicted on this because I also agree that, you know, if we have dumb gun control, it's not going to matter. If we just say, I can see that the targeted thing, like, hey, these are the people that are not allowed to fly. Perhaps it should be harder for them to get a bomb. I don't know. Like, that makes sense to me. And I think that makes sense to most people. And I don't I am no longer articulate because it is a conversation that I cannot be articulate about because I have never had a good. I took military science classes when I was in college, and so I too had that experience of going down to the gun range and treating the firearms appropriately and all that.
Well, I mean, I'm surrounded by people that I'm in Michigan. We have lots of hunters, lots of people that literally grew up with, you know, it's a father-son thing in a lot of cases. The family is, so they're very respectful. And I don't worry about guns around me in that way. I'm not a gun owner or anything like that. My thing is this. If we change the gun laws, and I think we probably have to at some point, but we're going to be, someone's rights are going to get stepped on. I mean, whether or not you agree with that, essentially, when we're limiting people who can get guns, someone's, so before we do that, I want evidence that it's going to make a difference. Because if it's not, then no one's going to give that right back up. If we go 10 years and we find that whatever we thought was going to work didn't work, it's not like they're going to say, oh, well, we're not going to do that. I want evidence, or at least I want a reasonable idea that it's going to make a difference. That's all I'm asking for.
This is what you're saying. You're saying, let's not do the scientific experiment unless we know what the result will be. You've got to do the experiment first.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Kevin. If you do the experiment and it doesn't work, do you think politicians are going to say, oh, we were wrong. Let's give you that right back. It's never happened.
What about 1994, anti-assault weapon, whatever it was. It was a 10-year bill. It expired. So why don't we do that again? Then we'll
because
have
we actually hang on, Kevin. We actually conducted that experiment, and it was and found it that
worked.
Had absolutely no impact on violent crime.
Worked.
So there you go. The problem is everyone's got their different set of facts
I'll
on this stuff.
I'll cite my facts. It worked.
It did not work.
Well, it depends.
Your facts tell you it worked. Mine tell me it didn't work, and that's half of the other problem that we have.
No,
with
that's
these
all of the problem we have.
How?
Because here's the thing: the gun rights people want an absolute. They just like the global warming people. They want an absolute. Prove to me beyond a shadow of a doubt not only that the problem exists, but that your solution will solve it completely. And
so
that
I'm okay with solve it a little bit. Actually, I'm okay with that. But my thing is that I don't think there's a lot. The problem is, it's actually taking a constitutional right and limiting it. You know, like that's
well,
a big
first
deal.
First of all, every right in the Constitution is limited. There is not an absolute right to anything. There's not
that,
an absolute
that's
right.
That's fine.
To
that's fine. But when
it's
you
not an
add these laws,
right to free speech.
When you add these laws, it's just I think it's important that it's well thought out. And I don't know that we're there yet. That's all I'm saying.
So I feel like some of these ridiculous, the Facebook memes that I see every once in a while, I see one that strikes me as kind of feasible, like no one's going to pass it, but I could see a bullet is $100 and right away you can have all the guns you want, but the bullets are super expensive and it's a joke, but it's like that would stop people from shooting off a bunch of bullets. And then like, what was the other one I saw that like, okay, so you can have all the guns you want as long as you have liability insurance. And that liability insurance is going to be something. And if anything happens with your gun, you're financially liable. And maybe that will make you treat these weapons differently instead of just lying around. You know, like maybe it's not take away the guns. Maybe it's not necessarily what we've been talking about. And these, maybe these are like local cases or there's a test bed or something ridiculous
outside
like
the box
that
stuff is good though. I think that's interesting. I think that's probably, it's going to be some variant of that, that if anything happens, it's going to have to be something like that. I mean, I love the liability insurance aspect of it because it still, you know, it doesn't limit rights as much as makes people say, okay, this could end up being a real problem for me.
I have one liability insurance question. And because I honestly don't know the answer, this has not personally happened to me. In most auto insurance policies, are you liable for the damage your car does after it's stolen?
Interesting. Probably not.
And again, we're not talking.
But if you left the keys in it running versus someone broke into you, you know, like clearly there's nuance that all over the place there.
If someone in your house took your gun, that's a different liability than if someone broke in and stole. I don't know.
I will say though, what Kevin and DJ sort of, there won't be a thoughtful discussion because the two the two sides are so ingrained. Literally, they're, you know, just like so much of politics. They're, it's beyond debating the facts. It's the two or more different sets of facts. You know, so my thing is, I'm perfectly fine with limitations on guns. I just wanted to be well thought out because I'm not a gun owner. It doesn't affect me. My only other thing is, there's so many guns out there already.
Well, here's,
I mean, keeping from selling them to the wrong person is one thing, but how do you, you can't, you know, that for a lot of it, the horse is already out of the barn. Am I right or no?
My other question here, though, is, and I was thinking particularly this after the Dylann Roof shooting. I don't know how much time have we or has anybody else spent into finding out what networks he was a part of. How much of this is, because I actually did, I'm the data geek that I am. I actually took a look at the Reddit crowdsource data, the one that had the source of the supposed 353 mass shootings out there.
Mm-hmm.
I actually took a look at it. For starters, almost half of those do not have any fatalities. But what I found more interesting or troubling was that 3/4 of those incidents had unknown as the perpetrator, which makes it very difficult to profile anything about it. Sure. If anything, it actually leans more credence to Kevin's argument, because about the only similarity we have with all these things is a weapon. But it's difficult to try to make to try to make conclusions based upon these sorts of things. But I do think if we have something like the Dylann Roof shooting, then first we have to do a step back. I mean, the kid had a coat that had the flags of old Rhodesia and pre-Mandela South Africa on them. And clearly that told me that clearly he was part of a larger network. And while we can and should have a discussion about guns, no argument there, and we can and should have a discussion about gun rights, because we have a procedure for amending the Constitution, and that includes amending the amendments. I would not be comfortable amending Amendment 2. Kevin probably would be, but we should have that discussion. America should be mature enough to have that discussion. But we shouldn't forget who the perpetrators are and why they were doing it. In a particular case like Dylann Roof, you know, maybe he had help of some kind. You know, one thing, the biggest problem that we hear that we on the right have is that when we hear terror network, we automatically assume Al-Qaeda, Daesh, some sort of foreign terrorist ring or something like that. And I know a lot of my friends on the left talk about domestic terrorism. Well, we shouldn't necessarily ignore it. I mean, it may very well be that there is a network of white supremacists, mm-hmm, who will largely pop off and do these things every now and then. There's no reason we shouldn't take a look at that too. And yeah, I fear sometimes that we get so focused on the weaponry that we forget to focus on the people. Mm-hmm. And that's all.
Yeah.
Can I suggest, go ahead.
My only observation there is we're starting to see more of that, I think, with Planned Parenthood these days, with that behavior, which I think is also terrorism, you know. But that's my point. Yeah, go ahead, Ken.
And I was going to say, on the subject of domestic terrorism, maybe we could talk about what Congress did this week.
Yeah. Okay. Here's some, or did not do. some potential economic terrorism. Hey, the next government shutdown could be at the end of this week, right? So that's a good one to keep your eye out.
It's crazy because I thought that when Boehner stepped down, he had sealed that deal up, so we didn't have to worry about it for a couple of years. But I honestly wasn't keeping close track of it.
I mean, it's so they did pass the gigantic transportation bill, which was one of his priorities to sort of clear the decks. And we don't know, like, the government. It depends what they do, right? Because if they say, "Well, we'll fund the government as long as we defund Planned Parenthood," then who knows where that fight goes? But I don't know. I think he is trying to get a lot of this stuff done. And, you know, the last time there was the threatened shutdown, it didn't happen. And this one would be right before Christmas. So, you know, ho, ho, ho.
What is the issue that the Republicans are threatening to shut down the government over?
They hate the government.
If I remember correctly, one of the appropriations one of the high ranking Republicans, I forget which one, said that there were about 100 issues that they still have to resolve between now and Thursday. However, most of them are small ball stuff. From what I've read, for example, the Planned Parenthood issue is not one that's going to be addressed here. They actually addressed what they did was they defunded Planned Parenthood as part of the abortion repeal that they passed out of the Senate this time. That'll be vetoed by the president. We all set down our markers for the presidential campaign, et cetera, et cetera. I don't see that popping up in this, because from what I've heard, from what I've read, from in fact Speaker Ryan himself, he said that was not really something that we're going to address. And frankly, I think what Robert Deere did essentially, forgive the pun, essentially killed that as an issue. There was no way that Planned Parenthood is going to get defunded in the wake of what happened there. But there are a whole bunch of other smaller items that need to be resolved between now and Thursday. Given the fact that we're dealing with 535 people, I would say it is probably likely that there will be one of those three or four hour pretend shutdowns that don't actually affect anyone, that it'll take until, 3 or 4 o'clock on Thursday morning or Friday morning until it gets done. But I don't see, and I could be wrong, but I don't see any big issue out there that is forcing anybody towards a shutdown. I just don't see it this time.
Yeah. Interestingly, the transportation bill that they passed was under a deadline because federal transportation workers were about to not get paid. So they had a deadline with that one too. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll definitely see.
Okay. So what else do we have to cover?
I think we killed it.
Yeah.
It was very inappropriate. I apologize. You guys were really solid tonight, and this is clearly all these things are going to come up again. I think it's interesting stuff. But thank you a ton for spending the time with me.
Yeah, it's been a weird rough week.
It's been a weird 3 weeks. Actually. Yeah, I agree. So, all right. So next week, I think we'll probably have some more stuff to talk about. You think?
I think there's a debate coming up on Saturday night.
Is that right? Okay.
I think so. I'm not sure. I could be off on that.
I really hope not, but you're probably right. So.
but there's one coming up soon, if not next week, soon after.
All right.
Yeah. There's a Republican debate in a week and a half. That much I do know.
Yeah. The 15th, is it? Yeah.
15th. Sorry. That's right. So it's not before our next show. All right.
Very good, guys. We will talk to you next week.
All righty.
Thank you for listening to the More Perfect Union podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes and check out the website at moreperfectunionpodcast.com. If you have any questions or comments for the More Perfect Union podcast crew, you can email us at moreperfectunionpodcast@gmail.com. We'll talk to you next week.